and welcome to Counsel for the State. I'm Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin. Counsel for the State is a podcast produced by my office. Our goal in each episode is to share information with Idaho residents, journalists, and anyone with an interest in state government. Our aim is to increase transparency, further understanding of the office's role in government, and discuss timely legal topics. I hope you enjoy this installment and consider exploring past episodes as well. With that, here is the Office of the Attorney General, Public Information Officer, and Counsel for the State host, Scott Graff.
Hello and welcome to episode 13 of Counsel for the State, our first episode of the new year. The arrival of the new year means a new legislative session, and with the 2020 session underway this week, we are going to spend some time on this episode exploring the role of the Office of the Attorney General and the role that it plays during the legislative session. To do that, we have a familiar voice here on Counsel for the State sitting in the guest chair today. Brian Kane is co-host of the podcast, but today is with us in a slightly different role because one of his main job functions as the Assistant Chief Deputy here in the Office of the Attorney General is that of Legislative Liaison. He is the point person between this office and members of both the State House and the State Senate. Brian, welcome back. I'm looking forward to shining a light on the work that you do this time of year.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.
So going into this session, just kind of curious, not this session necessarily, but any session, as the point person in this office for state lawmakers, I'm curious to know your sort of mindset.
So I think that, the mindset generally is we know we're going to get requests, and are we going to be able to handle whatever the volume of requests is? I can tell you that we're already seeing legislative requests through our office. So that started actually probably about 2 to 3 months ago, where folks want to prepare their legislation and have it ready to go, kind of on the first day of the session. And so we've already been engaged in the business of reviewing legislative requests.
And we'll talk about the process and the workload and that sort of thing. But my assumption is, you tell me, is it a good thing that the legislative process for this office starts that soon? Does that mean that there'll be less work to do in a less concentrated period once things are, really getting underway and getting very busy upstairs?
I don't think that it means there'll be less work, but sometimes on some of the issues that require a little bit more substantive legal analysis, by getting to us earlier, it allows us to take a little bit more time as far as that review and do more of the heavy lifting before the session gets started. And oftentimes what we'll see is early versions of ideas that are then refined throughout the session. And at least we've done some background work on those legislative issues, and therefore we can get the analysis completed a lot more quickly as it becomes refined.
So what we're specifically talking about is the function of this office as the legislature's attorney saying, here's a piece of legislation. This is the client saying, here's a piece of legislation. Can you give me an opinion on this? What kind of questions are clients asking when it comes to a piece of legislation?
Probably the most common question the legislature asks us is, whether their proposed piece of legislation is constitutional or legally defensible. Meaning, if someone were to challenge this statute, would it be able to withstand scrutiny under the federal or the Idaho constitutions? And then oftentimes they'll ask whether or not it creates conflicts within existing law. Are there statutes on the books that may need to be looked at as well as the one that we're proposing, or is this the sort of thing that it fits neatly into the already existing statutory system that we've got?
So take us through that process from the moment that there is a piece of legislation, potential piece of legislation, till the moment where our opinion on that legislation is delivered back to the lawmaker. What does that process look like?
So the process is actually incredibly simple. A legislator has a piece of legislation that they maybe have some concerns with, or maybe they went in front of a committee and presented it at the print hearing and someone asked a question or two that generated their concern. And so then they bring it down to my office and they say, hey, here's the question I've got on this piece of legislation. Can you provide us with an analysis? And we say, absolutely. Our goal during the legislative session is we try to turn around all legislative analysis within 24 to 48 hours. And the reason why our office operates on that intensive a schedule is because we never want to be perceived as the reason that the legislature is still in town. They work on a compressed schedule. We try to fulfill their need to work on that compressed schedule, particularly when you think about it in light of every day the legislature's in session, it costs the taxpayers approximately $40,000 a day. And so we don't want to be the reason for the legislature to still be in town. Then the analysis goes to the legislature, and they do with it whatever they want.
How heavy of a lift is that, 24 to 48 hours? Because some of this stuff is fairly involved, and it's not just simply opening up a law book and, you know, essentially regurgitating the information on the page.
Well, that's absolutely correct, and I want to emphasize the goal is 24 to 48 hours. There are certain pieces of analysis that take a week or even longer, simply because of the substantive work that has to go into the research. And analysis. And you know, sometimes legislators will bring us a piece of legislation and say, look, I know that this has got some constitutional challenges to it, but do you have any suggestions for how we could overcome them through edits to the legislation? And that's kind of a double lift at that point, because we're not only analyzing the legislation, but we're also proposing maybe some tweaks to their legislation with regard to how they could overcome constitutional issues within it. You know, at the heart of every attorney is a problem solver, and that's part of what our office does. We provide the analysis, and as often as we can, we try to help folks, because just about every piece of legislation is an attempt by the legislature to solve some problem that's being faced somewhere in the state of Idaho.
Now, once the request comes in and you have it, give us an idea of what that behind-the-scenes work looks like in our office. Are you doing the bulk of those analyses, or are you going and knocking on other doors within the office to find some help, and how do you identify who you reach out to in this office?
So the answer to that is yes, both of those things occur. I try to handle as much of the analysis as I can, while still maintaining the ability to continue to meet with legislators and kind of operate within that spectrum. But then I also usually do have to reach out to folks within our office. We have about 120 attorneys, all with different areas of expertise. We are the largest law office in the state of Idaho, and so I like to think that, you know, if we have a legal issue come in, somebody somewhere in our office has dealt with it at some point in time, and therefore we've got this vast body of knowledge that we can bring to benefit the legislature. And so I do reach out. Generally what I do is I kind of have a running I've kind of a little bit of a running Rolodex almost of who has worked on what issues in the past, what their areas of expertise are, how our divisions are organized, who's within those divisions, and then the ability to kind of reach out to those folks on an as-needed basis. I can tell you that within a legislative session, we probably, out of 120 attorneys, we probably use at least 100 of them.
I was going to ask you, how many people get tapped this time?
Just about. It's rare that someone in the office isn't tapped at some point in the legislative session for help on some legislative request. There may be an attorney that only gets tapped once or tapped lightly, but the chances are they're going to be part of the process at some point.
I think a good example, a previous guest on Council for the State last summer when we had a podcast discussing hemp and CBD issues in the state of Idaho, John McKinney is an attorney in our criminal law division, and John is sort of the foremost expert in this office on drug-related policy and law in the state of Idaho, and my guess is John's probably going to be busy in the coming weeks and months, but he's a good example of a door that you can go knock on when there's a very particular striation of state law that's being put under the microscope.
Absolutely, right. And he's over the years, I mean, he's cultivated such a body of expertise in the area of both marijuana and controlled substances that you know, for us not to use him, it would be a fool's errand. Mm-hmm. He's just got so much knowledge and so much substance that even if you know the answer, it's one of those things, it's a great second set of eyes to run an answer by, just in case there's something you didn't think of or a perspective that needs to be built into it. And in part, that's all helping the legislature not just build good public policy, but pragmatic public policy that people can use and understand. Right, the law is worthless if you can't understand it.
Is there something, for instance, going into this session, an issue that maybe requires a little brushing up on, and you go to an attorney in the office and say, hey, you know, don't necessarily know anything's coming for sure. However, let's be prepared and maybe take a look at this particular section of the code book, just so if something comes in, we're ready to get, you know, wheels on the ground very quickly.
I don't know if it's, I mean, I don't know that I would necessarily say that it's brushing up, but we definitely have areas of the law that we have to stay current on. And there are areas of the law that are evolving very quickly, in particular based on, you know, some activity at the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court level, the Idaho Supreme Court level. There are little points of analysis that perhaps require like a statutory change or maybe even a constitutional amendment within the state. You know, the areas of First Amendment law, abortion law, those are areas that are constantly evolving, and they're evolving very rapidly.
So that process is completed then. The analysis that we were requested to do is finished. It's handed over to the client, the lawmaker at that point. Who gets to see it?
That's up to the lawmaker. We have several analyses a year that never see the light of day. We provide them to the lawmaker. The lawmaker says, thank you very much for this analysis, and they may or may not use it at all. And so those will be strictly attorney-client protected because the legislature, through the individual legislators, is our client. Now, if that legislator takes our analysis and presents it in committee or on the floor, at that point, we consider that attorney-client privilege to have been waived, and whoever requests it can receive that analysis. The other thing that it's always important to remember is with 105 legislators, you know, two of them can ask the same question, and one can say, I don't want to share this, and the next one can say, I'm going to share this with everyone. And it's the same analysis and the same question. Now, you may not know that legislator A ever asked for the analysis, because the analysis that's distributed is from legislator B.
And I know, for instance, we talked about hemp and CBD. There were some opinions from last legislation from last year that we did some opinions on. Those ended up kind of out and about in the public. The mm-hmm. lawmaker who had requested those waived privilege. So when the media called, for instance, we could hand those over. Constituents with an interest in this subject area, we could hand that over. I think, what was it, a couple of years, I believe, criminal trespassing was put under the microscope upstairs, and there was some new legislation there. Our criminal law division did several opinions. Those ended up being released because attorney-client privilege was waived as well. One thing I would ask is, you mentioned how many attorneys get tapped this time of year for their expertise on doing opinions for the legislature. Do you have an idea, just roughly in a given year, how many lawmakers you have requests from?
So I don't know if I have a number for how many lawmakers, but I can tell you that last legislative session, it lasted about 90 days, and we received more than 250 requests for analysis within that time period. And so, I mean, it's a pretty healthy clip that we're going through the analysis. But I don't have a breakdown of how many members of the legislature.
Can the office decline to provide counsel or an opinion when asked?
So if it's a legislator, it would be very difficult for us to decline to provide legal advice or analysis. Sometimes we may discuss with the legislator whether or not they really need legal advice or analysis. And, you know, there are certain areas, you know, if it's advice that's being provided, for example, to a constituent that's maybe not necessarily directly related to legislative duties, we may say, hey, this constituent probably needs to get their own attorney. But it's very rare that we don't provide assistance to legislators. We're their attorney.
On the flip side, can they go to other attorneys, not in state government, and request opinions on proposed legislation?
So the answer to that is yes. And I think that it's one of those that you have to, I mean, there's nuances within that answer. Number one, they can't refer to that answer as an AG's opinion or an AG's analysis, right? It's just an attorney's analysis. Number two, you know, there are a number of attorneys within the legislature, and they have the ability to analyze legislation. Many of the lobbyists for the Idaho legislature are attorneys. They have the ability to analyze legislation, and at times they'll provide our office with their analysis to help us with our analysis. And so that's one of those things that occurs from time to time. And then the legislature has the ability to go outside and get their own counsel if they want. And at times they have chosen to do that. And it's all part of the system. And I think that, you know, it would be easy to take that as a slight against our office, but I think the better view is that everybody is kind of out there looking for the best solution. And so at times you wind up with a lot of cooks on a piece of legislation, and that can be cumbersome and that can be difficult, but at the end of the day, if it provides for a better analysis and a better piece of legislation, that's probably something that is worth undertaking.
This office rarely takes a position on proposed legislation. In fact, you know, it's almost a hard office policy to say, sorry, we, you know, policymakers are upstairs, we represent them, but this office is the state's attorney. Why does the office look at these issues that way?
So the office rarely takes a position on legislation. The pieces that we do take positions on are pieces of legislation that go to the core duties of the Office of Attorney General, right? And so we may take a position on something related to public corruption or the open meeting law, which we've got some enforcement authority under or over. And so I think that, you know, those, we have very limited areas. And part of the reason for why we're so reluctant to take part in legislative positions is the Attorney General, his mantra has been for our office to call balls and strikes objectively and accurately. Our goal is to provide the state of Idaho with the best, accurate, objective legal advice we can provide. If we start taking policy positions on legislation, we immediately erode our credibility with regard to analysis of that legislation. Because it's very easy to say the reason why you said that piece of legislation was unconstitutional is because you, from a policy perspective, are opposed to it. And so it erodes our credibility. If we don't take any policy positions, then we can always say, look, we've analyzed this for its legal defensibility, meaning can we go stand in front of a judge and with a straight face argue that it should be upheld? And that's our goal. And so in order to further that, we avoid taking policy positions.
Now, occasionally, a piece of legislation will come to the office. Historically, this has happened from time to time, and the office delivers an opinion back to the legislature saying, as proposed, this piece of legislation is unconstitutional. In your position, when that is the answer, I'm curious how you approach the lawmaker who came to you with that piece of legislation, if you sort of handle that situation a little bit differently than others.
So, I mean, I don't know that we handle it any differently. Part of our responsibility as attorneys to the legislature is that we have an attorney-client relationship. And I think that the important word out of those three is relationship. And so if you're going to tell somebody that their idea is unconstitutional, you probably want to have a face-to-face discussion with them or at least give them a phone call to say, hey, there's some issues with this. And sometimes the legislators will say, I kind of understood that, but is there a way for us to find a solution here? And then that takes a little bit more analysis, and we may have to figure out how that goes. Other times, we'll have a legislator that says, thanks for the info, I'm going forward. And I think it's really important for folks to understand that our opinions are not binding. It's like any other attorney-client relationship out there. You know, if you go to your attorney and you say, I'm short on cash, and he says, you need to find a legal way to get more cash and not rob an ATM, that doesn't mean you can't go rob an ATM. You do so at your own peril. And I think that, you know, that's one of the things that folks sometimes overlook is that just because we say that a piece of legislation would be difficult to defend or unconstitutional or whatever our analysis is, it doesn't bind the legislature. The legislature can move forward with it and pass it through both chambers, and the governor could even ignore it and say, yep, I'm going to sign this into law. And I think that that's one of those things. You know, we are advisors like any other advisor. Thanks for the advice, but I'm going to go do my own thing.
And I think one of the most interesting parts of this particular piece of the relationship between this office and the state legislature is that if the answer is this, we think this is probably unconstitutional, that legislation goes forward, then there's legal action as a result. This office is in charge of then essentially doing a 180 and defending that piece of legislation, or I guess at this point, the law in court. That will always be a fascinating relationship to me as someone who is not an attorney.
It is, and I can tell you that we've had a couple of situations where Exhibit A in the lawsuit has been a letter from our office saying, here's the constitutional issues with this piece of legislation. And at times we will have to go in front of the court and say, Your Honor, that's absolutely right. And this part of the legislation may not be able to be legally defended, but these other parts are able to be defended. And we actually had a case where we provided an analysis and said provision A can't be defended, but provisions B and C can. And the district court disagreed with our analysis. The Ninth Circuit disagreed with our analysis. We went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, who said, Idaho Attorney General, you're right. Those provisions that you said could be defended are constitutional, and they were upheld.
Now, if you're watching the legislative roster, you know, piece of legislation pops up, you've not been asked for an opinion on it, but you take a look at it, look a little closer and see that there may be some constitutional or other issues involved with it. Do you reach out to leadership? Do you reach out to the bill sponsor?
So we generally don't pop up and offer legal advice. We deliver advice when we are asked to do so. However, if the legislature were contemplating a piece of legislation that created a significant constitutional issue, and let's just use the example of, you know, let's say somehow it was going to violate the 13th Amendment, which is the prohibition against slavery, and somehow something like that got up on the legislative docket, we would probably reach out to some folks and say, hey, you may want to ask a question about this of our office, or B, take a look at this constitutional provision and maybe slow this piece of legislation down. Or we might reach out to the sponsor and say, hey, we've identified that there's some issues here. Do you have 5 minutes to talk about it?
The Attorney General advises the legislature. That's the bulk of our conversation today. But of course, the governor has a role in policymaking. I'm curious about our relationship as counsel to the governor during the legislative session.
So the governor does have his own counsel. But I will also add the governor and his counsel have a strong working relationship with our office. And we communicate with one another fairly regularly. And you know, one of the things to always keep in mind is that the legislature reviews each piece of legislation as they consider it. Well, when each piece of legislation is presented to the governor, he also considers it prior to affixing his signature on it to become law or to veto it. And so there is that second layer of analysis. And I think that, you know, the fact that the governor's office reviews it, the governor's office has counsel, we communicate with that counsel when asked, shows you kind of one of the built-in checks and balances within the system of checks and balances. And so I think it's a really good illustration of the system kind of working as our founding fathers envisioned it, with regard to, you know, it's not just one set of eyes on it. It's a series of eyes, and it's a series of discussions through these relationships that we have.
Every 2 years, there's an election, and some new lawmakers come to the state capitol. There's additional roles for you to play when there's a new legislature in town. Talk about some of the training that you do and the orientation work that you do with new lawmakers.
So the legislature, they conduct an orientation for new legislators every 2 years, essentially every election cycle. Our office participates in that, and we work with folks a lot of times on kind of the ethics of the office, working with our office, and some of those sorts of issues. We talk to them about public records laws and open meetings laws, and kind of help them adjust from whatever background they're coming to the fact that now they're within kind of a 24/7 public eye as a legislator, right? That's when we come to government, a lot of times we come to government with titles that don't necessarily conveniently affix and come off at 8 and 5 o'clock. And so I think that takes a little bit for folks to understand. And then the legislature also conducts, within the past few years, they've done ethics trainings just for the membership at large. They've also done some respectful workplace trainings, and our office has had an active, prominent role in those. And really, we are a legal resource for the Idaho legislature.
Are there other roles that this office plays while the legislature is in session as the legislature's attorney?
The office plays a number of roles because not only do we represent the legislature, but we also represent all of the agencies within state government. And so it's not uncommon for us to have an attorney such as myself advising the legislature on a piece of legislation, and then another attorney or group of attorneys advising the agency on a piece of legislation. And so on any given day, you may walk through the halls and see committees meeting and see a number of deputy attorneys general within those committees testifying and presenting. You can see them interacting with legislators along with their clients. And so in that regard, we fulfill a number of roles within state government, not just the legislature. And at times, you know, you have legislators who have specific topic areas. And so we may have attorneys that are, I don't want to say they're assigned to that legislator, but they certainly help that legislator shepherd through whatever their legislative idea is.
So we've been talking about our role and our relationship with the legislature during the legislative session. So end of March rolls around, beginning of April, whenever sine die may come this year. What does the relationship then change into or return to between lawmakers, leadership, and this office outside of the legislative session?
So I don't know that the relationship ever transitions. We're still in the same position. And I can tell you that within the last 5 or so years, there has been less and less of what I would consider to be kind of an off season. In part, it's because we've got a number of interim committees that are meeting. We have legislators who they're very active within their roles as legislators, and so they continue to ask questions regarding the impact of legislation that's been passed, and then whether or not a piece of legislation was passed and it's not necessarily having the impact they thought it would, what are the amendments that they could make to that legislation? And then they've also got perhaps some legislative ideas that didn't get through for one reason or another, and they're thinking, what can I do to change it to get it through the next legislative session? And so in all of those circumstances, we can help them through that. Our office also, we advise various kind of standing committees that meet not so regularly. And so, for example, we provide legal advice to the Citizens Committee on Legislative Compensation. In the next year or so, or 2 years, our office will provide legal advice and counsel to the Committee on Reapportionment. And so there's always something going on that appears to require some sort of legal attorney-client relationship.
Job security.
Well, I don't know if it's job security as much as it's a relationship that's ongoing and doesn't necessarily turn on and off at convenient dates.
Very good. Brian, anything on the topic you would like to add that we haven't had a chance to talk about?
No, I mean, I think that, I mean, to me, if as an Idahoan, if you're interested in government, the legislature is probably one of the more fascinating aspects of our government. It's of limited duration, and probably the very best way to learn about it is to come down to the State House and attend a committee hearing or attend a session of the House or the Senate. And it's really one of those great opportunities to see your government in action.
I've told folks that I work with in the media that sometimes your office looks like a doctor's office this time of year, because there is my office sits between the front door of our office and your office, and there's a lot of traffic this time of year where there's the door opens and it's a lawmaker coming to Brian for an opinion. So good luck to you with the upcoming session.
Thanks. Anytime you have a compressed schedule and a lot of ideas, you're going to get a lot of traffic.
Busy man. All right, that is Brian Kane. Brian is the Assistant Chief Deputy here in the Office of the Attorney General, and in that role, the Legislative Liaison. And that will conclude this episode of Counsel for the State. Thank you for joining us for this program. Other episodes of the podcast are available on the Attorney General's website and also through outlets like iTunes and Spotify. See you next time.